You're listening to The Record on KUOW Seattle. I'm Bill Radke. Join us on Twitter at KUOW. You pay a tax every time you fill up your car. We have one of the highest gas taxes in the country here, about 49 cents a gallon. How would you feel about paying less in gas tax and instead paying for every mile you drive? Would that be more fair? Would that be less fair? Let's ask the director of the Washington State Transportation Center, Mark Hallenbeck. Welcome back.
Thank you. Nice to be here.
Washington State is starting this pilot program in January. Why does the state want to shift to pay by mile?
So the main reason they are trying to shift to pay by mile is the gas tax becomes unworkable in the future. When you stop driving the 67 Chevy Impala and you now drive the Toyota Prius, you drive a whole lot more miles per penny you pay to the state to fix the roads.
Shouldn't we be rewarded for that?
You are.
Hey, you got an efficient car, you pay less tax.
And in some respects, that's great. But from a funding source to pay for the roads you're using on, it's a disaster. Mm. So they're looking at ways to replace the gas tax with something equitable.
Equitable. That's a controversial word. What's equitable? You like this pay-by-mile idea. Why do you like it?
I like it because it does what the original gas tax, and we're talking 1920s, was designed to do. It was designed to have people who use the roads pay to use the road. So that's to me, that's one great definition of what's equitable. If you use it, you pay for it. The more you use it, the more you pay for it. Our problem is that gasoline is no longer a fair way to do that because some people don't use it at all. I drive a Tesla. I don't, but and they don't pay any gas tax. So the legislature picked a value. I think it's $100 extra on your registration fee, but that doesn't have anything to do with whether you drive 100 miles or 100,000 miles in that car.
Well, but we're talking about what's fair now. You got a Tesla, and you're not polluting the environment as much. And the problem with any car usage fee, Mark, as you know, is that some people need or feel they need to drive to their job or their family. It's not a joyride.
Well, I agree. And the gasoline tax had the ability to say, hey, burning fuel is a bad thing. It has consequences, and therefore, if you burn more, you should pay more. Now, you lose that when you go to the per mile fee. You might have a different, if that's what you're trying to capture, you might change registration fees to capture that portion of it. You mentioned at the start that we have a high gas tax. We have a high gas tax because we have very low other taxes on our vehicles and our vehicle usage.
And no income tax.
And no income tax. Yeah. So, I mean, it's that mix that's necessary. And the problem is the gas tax in and of itself, particularly into the future, has real significant problems.
But what if you work in Seattle, but you can't afford to live there? You live in Maple Valley or Linwood or Sammamish. That's why you bought a hybrid or electric or efficient car. Now the state's going to change the rules on you and charge you for not being able to afford to live in Seattle?
Well, the question I could return without answering yours is, well, so who should pay for the roads that you're using? If you're not going to pay for the roads, why should I, who ride my bike into work, pay for the roads? So you can live in Maple Valley?
Fair question.
And that's the real question comes down to, how do you pay for roads? And that's a different question in many respects than how do we tax people in general. I'm a big fan of user fees. If you use something, you pay for it, right? And that changes. If we change the cost of driving, that would change the cost of housing.
How would it affect the cost of housing?
Well, if you make it expensive to drive long distances, then people will be less willing to move out. They'll be more willing to live close. What would happen is the prices in close would go up even more, and the prices for houses would go down outside.
Yeah.
And there would be a new balancing of what people are willing to pay.
How would the state know how far I'm driving?
So there are multiple ways to do this. The easiest, simplest way is a public official, look at your odometer once a year, once every 6 months, mm-hmm. right? And that works. The second thing you can do is have a device kind of like the snapshot that you can get from Progressive, right, where you plug it into your car and it follows you around and reports aggregated statistics. This is how many miles you drove. You can have such a device with a GPS in it, right? And the GPS knows to stop counting when you leave the state of Washington and say, here are your Washington miles, right? Oh. And it's still doing that process. You can have a smartphone that connects to your car so that it knows that you're walking around downtown aren't miles you're driving. So it has to recognize that it's in the car, right? And it does the same kind of thing. It can be more sophisticated. It can actually know what road you're on, right? It can say, okay, you're on I-5 and you there. And that's really good if you're trying to give money back to Kirkland, right? You want to know how many miles are in Kirkland. So if you track Kirkland separately from the rest of the state of Washington, you can say, oh, this is how many miles are in Kirkland. So the level of sophistication can change.
Maybe not so good if you don't want the state of Washington to know whether you're in Kirkland or not.
That's correct. And so that's why you choose, and the Transportation Commission is trying very hard to give you options to find out how people do. And they want options everywhere from the very simple. You're going to look at my odometer and you don't know when I leave the state, but that's my choice. I want to choose a simple number where you don't know anything about me, but okay, I'm going to write you a check, versus, okay, you know exactly how much is in the state of Washington, for driving is in the state of Washington, how much is not, and I'm only paying you for what I owe you, right? And okay, that's cool, but then you have to be able to keep track of those miles. And technically, that's not hard. Technically, doing that and also keeping your privacy is harder, but again, there are lots of ways to do that technically. And the question at the commission is, what's acceptable to people? How does it work? Can we do the audit process to make sure it's fair, that people can't cheat easily?
Talking with Mark Hallenbeck, director of the Washington State Transportation Center at the University of Washington, talking about this pilot program. It looks like the state is very interested in charging you eventually by the miles you drive and less by the gas tax. Mark, as we start charging by the mile, will the gas tax go away or will we pay both?
Again, I'm not a legal scholar on this stuff, but my understanding is the gas tax will slowly decline and miles charged would probably go up to replace it.
Because some people are suspicious. They think, the state's going to end up double charging me.
Yeah, I'm sure that. And again, that's why I suspect the per mile tax would go up.
Yeah.
The idea is not necessarily to double your taxes. The idea is to phase gas tax out and phase per mile charges in.
But will pay by mile cost the average person more or less than the old gas tax once it's old?
Well, ask the legislature. Are they trying to increase revenue or not?
Right.
The test is about a one-for-one replacement.
Okay.
Right? So cool. Great. Not a problem. On the other hand, if you look 20 years from now, it would cost you more because you're now driving lots of electric vehicles where you're not paying any gas tax, right?
And so what that's true. If you're comparing the two.
Right.
Yes.
They're trying to like keep it before it falls apart completely.
Okay. But they claim revenue neutral.
Right. They're looking at maintaining the revenue stream they have now.
Okay. So Mark, we've just gone through some pros and cons of pay by mile. It sounds like a possibly unpopular idea. One state poll found 58% of people opposed to a pay by mile charge. Is the public going to stop this from happening in Washington State?
Good question. I have no clue. The results in California have been that once people test it, they seem to like it. So people always resist the unknown. I will say that.
Yeah.
There are certainly reasons why you would not like it, particularly if you haven't experienced it. On the other hand, it might turn out to be a better way to go. A real question comes back to, well, how do you want to pay for your roads, right? I always like to phrase it that way. It's you and your roads. If you don't want to pay per mile, how would you like to pay for your roads? Do you want property tax? You want gas tax? You want income tax? I don't care.
You hear that, listener? He's asking for your input. You can go to KUOW's Facebook page. You can go to Twitter at KUOW. Send us an email, record@kuow.org. Mark Hallenbeck from the State Transportation Center wants to know what you think of all of this. Now, speaking of ways we charge people to drive, there is a Seattle City Council member who wants to study congestion pricing like they have in London and some other places where you pay extra to drive into the city at certain times. Will the idea we've been discussing, tracking the miles you drive, is that going to lead to the state eventually charging, being able to have the technology to charge you also for driving, let's say, downtown at certain times?
If everyone goes to a GPS-based system, you could do that. The Puget Sound Regional Council actually ran a major test, probably 10 years ago now, that determined how people interact with different prices on different roads at different times of the day, right? And correctly, people's behavior changed as a result of that in interesting ways. And so the transportation purists look at that and say, great, let's do this. We can manage it. Whether the public finds that acceptable or not is a fascinating question. And the answer is usually it depends, like all transportation planning questions, it depends. And mostly it depends on whether they like where the money is going and they think it's a reasonable and fair approach. So my quick example of this is Stockholm. Stockholm put a ring around the city and you had to drive in and they took all the money and put lots of transit service. And they said, we're going to do this as a 6-month test and then you get to vote. And they did the test. Everybody inside Stockholm was happy. Everybody outside Stockholm who was driving in was pissed. They voted.
How about that?
They voted no. All the people in charge lost, right? They were out. Mm. The next group came in and said, well, how about this version? We're going to put this toll ring around and all the money that gets spent goes to the suburbs. And the people who lived inside Stockholm who liked the traffic going away and the better bus service voted yes. The people who got the money in the far suburbs voted yes.
Huh.
And the people who paid to drive into the city voted no. And the two groups who liked it outvoted the people who didn't like it.
Right.
Right. So where the money went was far more important than whether, in fact, this toll ring existed or not. And so to date, that's what Stockholm's got, right? And so it's as much about where the money is as is it about transportation. Inside Stockholm, it's transportation. Outside Stockholm, it's about who's taxing me and who gets the money.
Okay. That's an instructive little story there. As Seattle might consider congestion pricing.
And by the way, the same thing happened in London, and the guy who put the London charge in got voted out of office, and that's how London's version of Donald Trump got elected.
Is that right? Okay, you're learning a lot from Mark Hallenbeck, the director of the Washington State Transportation Center. But here's an objection to congestion pricing from last night's mayoral debate. This is candidate Carrie Moon.
Congestion pricing puts too much burden on low-income folks, especially folks who have to drive for work or folks who are not well served by transit because they're in a low-income neighborhood, they don't have political power, they don't have much voice, they don't have transit. We absolutely have to get the transit in place before we can consider something like congestion pricing.
Does congestion pricing put an unfair burden on low-income people?
Define fair. But
yeah,
sure,
here we go again.
But sure, yeah. And they are the people who have the hardest time paying for it. I mean, I've proposed many tolling plans in my life, mostly so people could look at them. And you know, the biggest problem is, hey, even if I'm not a poor person, but I buy this house in Mill Creek or in Puyallup or whatever because I need these attributes in my house and I can afford that, right? Life is great and yeah, it's going to be a crappy commute, but I make that trade, okay, cool. When you come in 3 years, 5 years, 10 years later and say, oh yeah, well, you used to take an hour, right? And now you're going to get in half an hour, but you're going to pay me $4 each way. I can't make that trade, not because I wouldn't like the half an hour back each way in my life, because I don't have the $4 times two times 21 days a month. I simply don't have it. So it's not just the poor when you retrofit congestion pricing if they don't have alternatives. My argument with Carrie Moon is there are too many communities. It, because of the way we've built our communities, where the roads go, where they don't go, where density is, where it isn't, there are too many communities that you cannot serve efficiently with transit. And those people are stuck in congestion pricing because they don't have good alternatives and you can't give them good alternatives.
Well, couldn't technology tell us their zip code and they don't get charged congestion pricing if they don't have a transit option?
So the solutions then become, technologically and socially, are you willing to give particular people tax breaks in some way, shape, or form? Great. Everybody has to have, and you all have a license plate on your car. Great. Make it electronic so it's easy to track when vehicles go down the road. And, you know, people who qualify for food stamps get 16 trips for free on I-5, right? I'm just making this stuff up,
right?
And now you could either use those or you could sell them. I mean, hey, it'd be a great new social service on how you distributed value, right? And it's because maybe they don't need them for trips, but they could, instead of food stamps, they could sell their free trips to people who want to buy those free trips. So you have a new market, and there's, you know, it gets really complicated really quickly as you're trying to deal with what's fair.
Here's another idea for reducing traffic from last night's mayoral debate. This is Seattle mayoral candidate Jenny Durkin.
I want to work with the big employers, and if I'm mayor, I'm going to do it to say to Amazon, to Starbucks, whoever, how about on Monday, 20% of your workforce doesn't come in, they work from home. On Tuesday, a different 20%. On Wednesday, a different 20%. So we literally have fewer people coming in.
Why don't big employers shift, I haven't heard this for decades, shift the old agricultural workday that starts at sunrise when the sun illuminates our fields? What's stopping big employers from making that change? It would help congestion?
They do.
Oh.
They do tremendously.
More than we realize.
More,
they've already
much
have.
More than you realize. Absolutely. Many employers start early, start late. You have flex time on when you go. That actually helps spread that. I mean, our commute period is 4 hours now, right? Why is it 4 hours? Because there are a lot of people coming in at 6 o'clock in the morning. Have you been on I-5? You know, at 5:30, and I-5 coming up from Tacoma is packed at 5:30. Those people are coming in early and they're going home early.
Do you think we've shifted as much as we're going to, or is the shift going to be just accelerate?
I think there will be continued shifts. I told somebody the other day, University of Washington is much bigger now than we were in 1984. And yet the traffic that we generate in terms of cars to the university is dramatically lower than what we used to do there, even though we're considerably bigger, right? So those same things are happening. They just don't happen fast enough, big enough.
Yeah. You can see me most days pulling into the light rail station lower campus and riding a bike share up the hill across the campus.
And, you know, hooray, and those things are great. And then we'll have to deal with, well, are the bike share being left in the right places and how you, I mean, it's just, it's one question after another.
One question after another. That should be the new name of KUOW's The Record. We'll change that to, hi, I'm Bill Radke. Welcome to One Question After Another. And my guest has been answering questions and exchanging ideas and pros and cons as we talk about how to charge the driving, how to charge us for the driving we do. Mark Hallenbeck, director of the Washington State Transportation Center, University of Washington. Great to see you again, Mark. Thank you.
Thanks for having me.
And on Facebook, we asked you what you think about pay by mile. Nick says it sounds strange, but it's more fair than the current system. Al says taxing people per mile is extremely unfair for people who can't afford to live in the city but have to commute in for work. John says, remove the gas tax, and I would be fine with it. Justice has this idea. It would need to be based not only on miles, but gross vehicle weight. Charging a smart car the same amount as a Hummer stretch limo is senseless. And on Twitter, Leslie writes, so will bike riders finally be charged for using the roads? And on Twitter, Tara says, why not just install toll booths like we have on the East Coast? Hashtag too complicated. Thanks all. Thanks for listening. Thanks for responding. More of The Record coming right back at you.